This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20. This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On Screen Live. My name is Andrew Jupin, and welcome to the first post-Barbenheimer edition of On Screen Live. Good afternoon, good evening, or good morning, depending upon where you're getting the show this fine day. Welcome into the chat here. Who we got? Winnet Shan, Nick B, Michael Brooks. Ariana, Leah MT, Daniel Schumacher. Tata Hababa, how's everybody doing this fine day? Hope you had a good movie-going weekend or a movie-watching weekend at home, perhaps. See, we got some big ones up front here. The birthdays, happy birthday, Laura Layton. You know her as Sydney Andrews on Melrose Place, of course. Rose Byrne, the star of Insidious, The Red Door. Happy 74th birthday to Michael Richards, if you can even believe it. And check out this one. 83 years old, Mr. Dan Hedaya today. I did my best to find a picture of him smiling, and that's as close as you're going to get. But speaking of dudes smiling, got my four best buds here to talk about what went on all over the box office this weekend. Coming in first, you know him, you love him, Mr. Eric Siska.
Oh, my. You know, those birthdays, what an achievement. Soon enough, you're going to have to change some of them to tombstones. We'll give you those updates.
Yeah, death dates, dude.
I mean, 83, 74, getting up there.
Getting up there. Speaking of getting up there, the old man himself, Steven Sadak.
Getting up there, getting close. We're all talking. We're doll crazy this weekend, and I wanted to show one of my favorite toys. And honestly, could you imagine if they ever made a Spider-Man movie? Could you? I think that would be Bucks.
Oh, Bucks. Bucks.
Oh, I bet.
It's nuts they haven't thought of that yet. I mean, that's like at least $1 million right there.
At least $1 million at least.
What's the actual number? It's like there's 20 movies with Spider-Man now.
Two Garfields, three
partridges in a pear tree,
two animated. And
the number of actors that have played Spider-Man at this point, with all these blah 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 Spider-Verses, you got like you're in the dozens,
dozens of people,
dozens.
Hey, speaking of dozens of people, here's somebody who knows dozens of people. Chris Cabin.
Field of Dreams is a crock, a kinder, gentler crock. If the Reagan era was Eisenhower II, this picture could be construed as the opening salute of the Bush era, Eisenhower III. If Whoa. I could have any job on this planet, uh-huh. it would be to kick Kevin Costner in the nuts mm-hmm. every wow. day for the rest of my life. I dream about it sometimes.
Chris.
And that's what, excuse me?
Did Pauline Kael live to see the release of The Postman? Do you know, Chris?
I'm trying to remember. I probably.
Because she'd really be wanting to smash nuts.
I think she was there till like maybe 99.
Is that right?
Let's see. I think. I'm not entirely sure.
I wish Reagan and Bush were Eisenhower 2 and 3. That would have been better than what we got.
That was actual quoting from Pauline Kael. I'm not that sharp, of course. Whoa.
She's posting her L's in that book. Huh?
How about this? Pauline Kael died less than a week before 9/11.
There wow. you go. Yeah.
Ooh, right 3rd. Under the door.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I got to check those flight logs. That seems a little too convenient.
She got to heaven and it got really smoky a week later.
She was good. Oh, she was always good on. With the last line. So I think that's pretty good.
We got a lot to get to today, of course, gang. And the big thing, of course, is the American box office this week. Let's take a look at it in a segment we like to call Highest Gross. All right. No surprises here, as it turns out, but some interesting things moving on the board here. First up at 5, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny still hanging on. What are we talking here in its 4th week? So a month with Indy, another 6.7 million.
This thing has just disintegrated from my memory at this point. I remember Mads Mikkelsen with the video game face. That's about it.
Yeah.
I remember a lot more than that, but yeah.
Yeah, I love playing that demo level at the start.
You
know?
You lost today, kid. It doesn't mean you have to like it.
Hey, make a video game. It looked pretty good.
Yeah.
That would be a video game. Open world Indiana Jones game. I'd like
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Hey, you know what also be an open world video game? Coming in at number 4, Sound of Freedom.
Woo! You did it, everyone.
Still.
Oh, well, man. Actually, it is an open world video game if you're totally insane, which most of the people who enjoy that film are.
Right. I guess that's true.
Getting all sorts of bonus points for running up to terrified parents in the grocery store and accusing them of being abductors of their own children.
You've got to abduct children in order to stop the abduction of children. Well, it's simple.
It's a good point.
Money laundering needs a dump point. So you have to understand that companies like Big Bazooka Coffee or Maybe I'll Shoot My Wife clothing line, these people need to put their money places. And Sound of Freedom buying out these theaters and making sure people can go and see the message that you should fantasize about stopping kidnapping. It's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I see it. I understand why
What would Pauline Kael think?
it would have been kicked down to one of the lowlier film critics at the Times if that were the case.
Yeah, Rupert Spud working for the New Yorker or New York Times.
I love that guy.
You have plenty of time to fantasize about stopping child abductions when you're alone at Thanksgiving. So
that's true.
I mean, you need something to hold on to.
When you are eating a Boston Market chicken for Thanksgiving, Anyway, here we go. So now we get into the interesting stuff here. He jumped off a mountain in the movie, and the box office fell down a mountain in the second week, unfortunately, for Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. Take a look at this, folks. We're talking $19.5 million. This represents a 64% fall from last week, which was inevitable. You are, it's a similar audience.
Should have put it out earlier this summer.
Yep.
They just did not expect, I don't think, the Oppenheimer juggernaut. I mean, you know, Barbie was going to be big, but Oppenheimer.
And Barbie helped. The one hand washed the other with this cultural phenomenon that is Barbenheimer. A lot of people were doing that. And
I love it.
Yeah.
They were, you wish you were going up against the Haunted Mansion because that Yes. Barbie is gonna. Barbie and Oppenheimer, I think, are gonna have a nice, smooth second week.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, this might have a better third week too.
Sure.
You know, you'll see what happens there. And the funny thing is, too, this movie was still on more screens than Barbie and Oppenheimer. And that's just this business, gang. That's the way that works. Mm-hmm. So moving right along, Oppie.
There he is. Love him. I'm going to become one of those annoying James Cameron guys. Like, you don't bet against him. I'm going to be that for Nolan now.
Oh, really?
Don't bet against him, bro.
We're looking here at $80.5 million, which is wild.
For a drama.
Yes. Look, yeah,
it's a three-hour drama.
That's biographical drama.
No, we're back. The movies are fully back.
47% of this box office represented premium large format screens. So your big Dolby theaters, your Regal RPX is kind of a deal. IMAX, 26% of the total, which is two times the average percentage for box office related to how much of the IMAX portion it is. Go ahead, Chris Cabin.
I was seeing that people were like looking at their local IMAXs and their 70 millimeter places, and like they were sold out through the second week of August. Like,
well, yeah,
those screenings, like certain, yeah, I'm sure it's not like across the board. I'm sure those are just meaty times right after work, and stuff like that. But like, still, for something to be carrying that kind of weight at this point, and like somebody brought this up, no, you gotta wonder if we were like up and running when Tenet came out. Does that thing just blow everything out of the water?
It would have done well, but it would have been maybe, like, that probably did really well opening, and then it would have had a fall off from perhaps bad word of mouth.
Yeah, people would have then watched it, you see, and then been like, well, what the fuck is that?
Well, of course,
and been rightfully upset.
With different sides, much like the Tenet boys, we're on different sides here. Steve is with the Branagh crowd.
Yeah, so I'm running this way, he's running that way.
But like, that movie split the audience. Like, half people were like, that's amazing. I don't know what the fuck it's about, but it's amazing. And half people were like, that's bullshit. I think you might have gotten a really big showing if we were up and running.
Oh, it definitely would have done much better. And I mean, like this guy, people, his movies are events. People want to see them.
Oh, dude. Yeah. All the fucking neck beards are out yesterday. Let me tell you. Don't worry about it.
You know, how many directors can command that anymore? It's pretty impressive.
It's a very, very small list. Yeah. And then, so here we go, gang. Kaboom. No surprises. Barbie, the number one movie in America right now. Look at this. $155 million.
Insane.
That's pre-pandy numbers.
It is.
That is.
And for a comedy, this is like unheard of. This is a huge, huge, huge.
It is.
Hopefully there's comedies in the future now, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is like sort of like the biggest of big box kind of comedies, but it's a comedy all the same. And let's see other things about it. You know, highest grossing female directed film of all time.
Sure.
$337 million globally. And it beat out Mario Brothers for the biggest weekend of the year. And also, we should say, this was the biggest box office take, the fourth largest weekend of all time in the United States. $302 million at the box office.
We're back.
For what I have to say is an incredibly weird movie.
Yeah.
Like a genuinely strange thing. If you look, it's not a kid's movie. I don't think you could argue that. Like, it has those elements, but it's for something this off out there. I was shocked.
Oh, honestly. Yeah.
Even with these numbers.
Because it's people wanted something fresh and women wanted something fresh. You know what I mean? Something marketed towards them that they had a real emotional bond with, you know what I mean? That they grew up with and all that stuff. And like, we really play into male nostalgia a lot. There's a lot of like false, you know, why don't we ever make movies for women? We just made Joyride. You know what I mean? Like, that's not exactly true, but I do think that there's like something to be said about actual female nostalgia versus the male nostalgia that we get a lot of.
It's very true.
And ambition, I think. Yep. I think Barbie's a very ambitious movie on every scale, and like, no smoke to Joyride whatsoever. But like,
no.
That's a movie we've seen 100 times before, and like in different forms. And like, they seem to be doing it with a very good cast. So you know.
See, but my male nostalgia is for 1945.
Yeah, dude.
Well, I mean, what, dude? This, you know, Oppie, Marlowe, like, it totally makes sense.
Your two Grampy favorite nostalgia,
dude. Yeah,
Gramp into the streets, man.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about it more when we talk about the movie in a little bit. But I was genuinely surprised that like they got away with that aesthetic getting put out for such a major motion picture.
Sure,
and just the way that it plays, I was sitting there like, I can't believe this got released, not in a bad way. I will go on to tell you in a few minutes that I liked the movie, but I was genuinely surprised that it was a movie released the way, you know, as is. Like, that's how it came to theaters. It was very surprising. So, yes, much more talk about that in the minutes to come. But, you know, we're going to be off the air here. You know, this is the finale of On Screen Live before we get to our summer break. And, you know, there's a lot of movies that are going to come out in August and beyond. So, you know, those movies will be releasing, but also trailers for other movies will be releasing at the same time. So there's going to be a lot to catch up on in September. But for now, got a couple here that we want to keep track of in a cleverly titled segment we've deemed Trailer Segment. Oh, yeah. So we got two coming up here, gang, that we're very, well, excited for one. We'll see about the other one here. Where are we with all my tech stuff here? So no poster yet, but I just...
That's better picture, than a poster.
Yeah. This picture of Giamatti is kind of all you want.
Yeah.
So good. Look at that guy. Oh, boy, right there. I want him to yell at me.
He's got it, dude. Don't worry about it.
I saw this trailer. Yeah. I'm excited.
Yes. I'm very excited. Me too. It's, you know what is awesome about this movie? It's being released in no fucking November. Get your scarves on and let's fucking just deal with dramas. And you know, I'm still upset that You Hurt My Feelings was released in the summer. Absolutely something that should have been released. I needed a scarf for that movie. I needed a hot cup of coffee. This is what I want.
Oh, that's staying inside movie big time.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted it's an autumn movie for the Jennifer Lawrence sex comedy. You needed a sweater for that.
No, You Hurt My Feelings.
I heard No Hard Feelings. Excuse me.
That's just, you know, these like talky, thinky indie dramas. This is fall weather, my friend.
You're talking about the Hollif Center movie.
Yeah, we got to put out a cardigan at least.
This, at least for right now, is 10/27 limited from Focus Features and then November 10th wide. We will see. We got the Luca Guadagnino already changed dates because of the strike. That's now getting dumped in like April or March or something.
Oh, Jesus.
Three's a Crowd. Is that one?
The movie Three's a Crowd. That's
correct.
Okay. So we got the new one from Alexander Payne, his reteaming with Paul Giamatti. All you guys ready on your end to start it up?
Oh, yeah.
All right. The holdovers in 3, 2, 1, go.
You just earned yourself a detention, sir.
We don't need a trailer for this.
No, we do not.
That's stupid. Oh man, him playing a dickhead teacher. Yep.
Yeah, and I just love that 70s, early 80s vibe we got going here. It's really, really nice.
Yep.
Well, I mean, he was a teacher in Sideways, but we didn't watch him teach. You know, similar to him
interacting with children.
Oh yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, he just tells that kid to read at the end.
Oh right, yeah. I love this horror narrator guy too.
Yes.
This winter, Paul Giamatti is getting stuffed for Thanksgiving.
The wandering eye, it'll find you.
Oh, yeah, just prick teacher, role of a lifetime.
I'm going to ask Alexander Payne, super fan. That's very funny. What was the last Alexander Payne movie? Was it
Downsizing?
Was it Downsizing?
Oh,
well, wow, I did not watch it.
It's good. It's really good. I like it quite a lot.
Interesting. Interesting. Split Room.
Yeah. I think that is it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Cause it's been a while. And this is like obviously like as return to form as you can get.
Yes.
You got Big Paul here. Thankfully, Billions let him go. I think he does have a collar on his he's got an anklet that Billions needs to know where he is.
Yes,
but he's allowed to be in this movie.
Can't get too far away from the Showtime offices.
He actually wears a bondage collar in Billions at one point, right?
No, does he?
I think it was the first episode. I didn't really watch it.
It's a continuing storyline.
Yeah, he's into some erotic stuff.
Ooh, good for him. I mean, this is essentially Alexander Payne's Wonder Boys.
Yes.
Right, yeah. Yes, which I also...
Nothing wrong with that,
movie.
Dude.
Wonderful movie.
Yeah. Ooh. I mean, yeah, this movie absolutely fully could have been made 20 years ago, and I'm here for that.
Yes.
You're going to get me fired. This is your Rubicon. Do not cross the Rubicon.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know the writer, but that's great. I love that way it holds on the end there.
Right, yeah. Just that, trying to make it look like film.
Yeah, I left a bunch of pillows under a blanket. Hopefully Billions doesn't notice.
I got to tell you, yesterday when I caught Oppie, this was in front of it.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, I was front row IMAX. Paul Giamatti's huge frozen face like that. I was clapping in the theater, dude. I was clapping. If this doesn't get moved where it's placed now, that's fall festival stuff. So that could be TIFF, that could be New York Film Festival, who knows? But yeah, fingers crossed, nothing gets changed up with this one. But I'm pumped for it. And yeah, I did double check his IMDb, and it was Downsizing was last. Before that was Nebraska.
Oh yeah.
And Descendants, which I think are both great. Yeah, I don't know. Nebraska, I only saw Downsizing once at Toronto, and I didn't care for it.
I get people's reservations with it, and I get people's problems with it. It's not one that I'm like, oh, why doesn't everybody love this?
That's the one where they make the people little.
Yes. Yeah. I think it was just, I was like, oh, Alexander Payne's doing like pseudo kind of like fantastical sort of stuff. That's weird.
Yeah.
So that's probably because it was one of those, I wasn't expecting that to do that. But
this,
I don't know.
This one does seem much more in the Nebraska register.
Yeah.
To me.
Definitely. So also what I think you could argue is on the Nebraska register, the Marvels. I should say, folks, I forgot to mention a second ago for the last one, but if you're watching along, you can find the links to these in the show description right below here on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But yes, the Marvels, it goes wide the same day that the Alexander Payne goes wide.
Wow. Which is interesting. Let's get a, Marvel overs going.
The Marvel overs. Marv overs. There it is.
Marv overs.
I'm getting Marved over. I do think this is really a sequel to the absolute cultural phenomenon that is Secret Invasion. You can't go to the deli without people talking about it.
No,
people love
insane.
This stuff. This they is love gonna it.
Open lukewarm and a 70% drop in the second weekend.
Hey, look, dozens and dozens of people have fallen asleep to Secret Invasion. And you can't argue with those numbers. You can't.
I'm now officially not caught up. Like I was watching it every week. It's like on Thursdays I would check Strange New Worlds out. And then I'd begrudgingly watch Secret Invasion. And last week, I just watched Strange New Worlds. And I was like, let's go play Zelda.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Better use of time. Incredible. I don't want to. But yeah, I think Zelda's a much better use of time than whatever that thing
it's
is.
It's just so fucking boring and shouldn't exist. But yes, this is, I guess, the follow-up to that. Yeah. From Nia DaCosta, I'm glad she's, getting gigs and whatnot. Hey. But just whatever.
Cash and checks.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, here we go. The first feature length trailer for the Marvels in 3, 2, 1, go.
It's a spaceship.
That is a spaceship.
Nick Fury, my favorite one-eyed man of interest. I don't care for this intergalactic remix we're using throughout this.
Oh yeah, we're having fun with that.
Don't
I didn't even notice it yet, but yeah, there it is.
Is this a new trailer or have I? Because I think I've seen this before.
There's been another version of this.
Okay, yes. Okay.
The family annihilator, did she say?
Excuse me?
I mean, I think I like that first Captain Marvel movie, and I do like Brie Larson as this character. Yeah. Didn't see this Ms. Marvel, even though I like the comics. And then the WandaVision Marvel.
Yeah.
Woman. I would just like a sequel Rambo. To Captain Marvel. Yes. I don't want to know nice. About these other people. I don't want to know about Secret Invasion. I don't give a fuck.
It well, seems a little, they're like, they didn't trust it. So they're like, let's just cram a bunch.
Also, forever expansion. Never, yes, right. you can't, nothing can let lie. Everything has to be expanded.
It's like, so. If you're a fan of this thing, you'll come to this. If you're a fan of this thing, you'll come to this. Like the Avengers when they finally, yeah. you know.
Well, that's the thing is like, if you're a fan of WandaVision but not the other stuff, you'll watch this.
Yes.
If you only watch Ms. Marvel and not the other stuff, you'll watch this.
Yeah.
It's a team Ugh. Up, baby. Oh, it changes everything. Wow, okay.
Everything, dude.
Finally.
It's changing everything.
Yeah, and then, you know, someone bangs a staff and purple magic comes out of it. It's just like every other 51 of these movies.
Pretty much.
I think the villain is from Velvet Buzzsaw.
Okay.
I'll have to take your word on that, dude.
I think so. That's it. Trying to place her.
This CGI also looks like all the other uninteresting Marvel CGI.
And especially since they're doing so much like Marvel television, what distinguishes this from what I'm watching on TV, you know, in a way?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, you know why? Because it's not just people sitting in a room talking to each other. There's actual... okay. There seems to be actual action, which is kind of exciting. That's fair.
It's different than Secret Invasion.
There's superheroes being superly heroic, which seems exciting.
There's a cat with tentacles that eats things. That's pretty cool.
I do like that. That was in the first movie.
Yes, it was. It's one of the better things about the first movie, I think.
It was, yeah. The cat should get a movie.
Yes.
Come on. Look. You got this Strays movie. I don't need it. You give me tentacle mouth cat. I don't remember its name. I'm sure it's a wonderful but cat.
The cat thing was like funny as like the reveal of that's how Nick Fury lost his eye. But like, why are we bringing that back? It's, you know, it's just because like you remember the things you maybe laughed at the last
exactly.
time.
Exactly. Like, look at our recent episode on American Pie 2. It's just do right. exactly what worked the last time.
Yes.
And it's just so stunning that, I mean, Marvel, you just think about it. This Blade movie is now DOA, it seems, now that Mahershala has walked. And you got...
Wait, whoa, hang on.
He day that walked?
Happened? Did I make that up? Did I dream that? Am I nuts?
He day walked out of there? Walked.
I thought he was.
I mean, you could be right. I don't know.
You're probably right. You know this stuff more than I do, anyway.
Looking it up now. Let's continue with the show, but I'll tie back in.
I mean, I know that it got bumped because of the strike and everything like that.
Okay, maybe that was one of those, like, he's very frustrated as of September. Yeah, I don't know. I just maybe
as far as I know, he's still attached to it, but they moved it to like 25. So yeah, no, because they can't even make it right now. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see with those movies. But if you're Marvel right now and you're looking at like what this weekend was, and you know, if you're, I should say, you're Disney, you know. And your company was nowhere near either of these movies, you know. And also, if you're Paramount, too, you're kind of like, we tried with Tom. But, like, if you're Disney, man, you're fucking sweating it right now.
Also, I think one of the things with Mission Impossible, I think it would have done better had it had not been for Top Gun Maverick, which was in theaters forever. Yep. So I feel like a lot of people were like, well, I just saw the big Tom Cruise movie, and there's another one already. Sure.
Yeah. Entirely possible. Yeah. Also, it was like a movie you'd been hearing about forever because of the pandemic delays. Yes, so it's
that's
finally out, you know. All right, y'all. So let's get into it here. We all experienced Barbenheimer this weekend. I did the double feach.
Same.
And Eric, you did. You other guys, you did not. That's right.
No. Yeah, I did Friday. We did Barbie, and just last night we did Oppenheimer.
Uh-huh. I did Oppenheimer on Thursday. I saw Barbie yesterday.
Cool. So we've all watched all of these. One of those rare weeks where we all got to the theater, which is great.
So Andrew, what order did you go in though? Since we're the only Barbenheimer bros, which order did you go into?
So I did Barbie first. Chelsea and I went and saw Barbie, and then I went to Oppenheimer by myself because she's a well-adjusted human being that was like, I'm just gonna go home and see it another time. And I was like, I gotta do both, I have to.
Me and my wife did Oppenheimer first, then Barbie.
So that's interesting, man. What, you know, I'm kind of curious because like seeing Barbie first,
Yeah.
It was like, you know, you had the laughs and everything, and then you went into this soul-crushing, terrifying, infuriating movie.
I had the opposite reaction.
No. I thought
it was Oppenheimer was hilarious. I was banging my knee. And then I went into this.
His wife's drinking again.
I don't know, man. That fucking gust of wind taking off Einstein's hat was still funny in the theater.
It was. I love that.
But so, you know, Barbie here, I think we might be a scotch split on. I'll jump out and say I think it's very funny. It's probably the funniest thing I've seen all year. I thought, you know, Greta did a great job pulling this all together because, like, I will say, when I remember hearing, like, I think back to when I heard Greta Gerwig Barbie movie, I was like, oh, just what in the fuck Brooklyn hipster shit is this? But like she totally fucking pulled it off. I couldn't believe it. Thought it was very funny. I will say I think it sort of trips over itself trying to do its best to make everybody happy and winds up doing this like pseudo South Park, like everybody was a bit wrong, which I don't think it needs to do. trying to explain that without like spoiling too much.
Yeah.
Like yeah. It's just like I think there was a little too much Ken catering. that's just me. But Gosling, man, I mean, I knew the guy could do comedy, but he's the funniest fucking part of this movie. He stole it from me.
I mean, he's really funny.
I loved it. I also had issues with how it ended. I think I'm gonna see it again. And I think to me, it is dealing with a lot of the same things that Asteroid City is dealing with, like the reconciling of making big stylized movies that don't really look or act like real life when you have you're dealing with decline, real decline in real life, like for a lot of people and for the country in general. Like, I think these are that's what's interesting about the way they mix the like going into the real world part. Again, I don't want to give too much away about the thing, but like probably going into the real world, quote unquote, like stuff like that, I think deals with that in a way that was interesting to me on top of all of the incredible design, the humor, which I did. I think everybody
design,
was right in.
The production design, the set design, that's what really blew me away about this movie. I thought it was funny as well. I do think that the ending, they didn't really stick it, but it's kind of a hard thing to adapt anyway. And I think they did a good job considering all of that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's a great movie that exists. Honestly, like it was really cool, you know, seeing all these groups of friends and people. Again, this movie wasn't, I don't have the nostalgia for the product that other folks do. So it's not for me. I'm not Ben Shapiro being like, why the fuck did this happen? You know what I mean?
Like, oh, you mean the internet's biggest loser this morning? Exactly. The fucking capital L loser.
Did Andrew drag you to see it?
My producer dragged me. He put me in his little pocket and dragged me all the way over it. No, but you know what I mean? Like, so I don't have the nostalgia for it. And it's okay for a movie not to be entirely for you. I did find it really funny. I do think that the production design's incredible. I think Gosling, Robbie, Simu Liu's really good in this. I'm happy to see Simu Liu do some stuff.
Yes, he was great.
It's nice to like him.
Issa Rae is really good. There's a lot of like standouts. I just think that the movie is really overworked. The script is tripping over itself. Kind of, Andrew, you pointed at it. There's a moment in the movie where I think Margot Robbie says something to the effect of, like, I don't feel very pretty. It's been a couple of days. Apologies that I saw Oppenheimer 2. I don't feel very pretty or something like that. And then immediately the intermittent, always, you always know the script's good when they have a narrator sometimes, but not always. Helen Mirren has to show up and be like, well, you'd know that'd be better if it wasn't coming from Margot Robbie. Like, it's just, it's anticipating people getting upset about certain things and or anything that might be a stray hair. It's like, let's cut it immediately. I think that is an impulse that movie has that I wish it didn't. It felt very self-conscious to me about falling all these ways.
It 100% is, but I will say, at least for me, that time, that joke worked really well because I was sitting in the theater like, what are you fucking stupid? And then Helen Mirren says that. And I was like, all right, you're hanging a hat on that one because it's like the most obvious of all of those. I'll say, as much as I think he's fucking hilarious and like is a total legend at this point, all of the Will Ferrell Mattel stuff did not work for me at all. And I think one of the reasons is, for whatever reason, they decided that the way that the Mattel office world functions is the same way as Barbie Land versus the real world. Like, you see other parts of the real world in like Venice Beach and other like parts of LA and whatever, and everyone's acting like we act in society more or less. And then whatever for whatever reason, like Will Ferrell and all those Mattel guys are like the way that they mine the humor from it is they have them act like fucking aliens from outer space in a way. And that I was just kind of like, this was like a step too far. It had me laughing at parts, but I think overall having them act and function that way did not work.
That's an interesting point, because if they were more like regular people and if they got into the, you know, go to the Barbie Land or whatever, it would have been interesting to see that kind of fish out of water thing versus a fish and fish.
I don't think that the rules of the world are ever really well established, which is a script problem. You know what I mean? Like, what, there's a part when Kristen, Weird Barbie, played by
Kate McKinnon.
Kate McKinnon is like, there's going to be a portal rift in the world if you don't fix it, and blah, blah, blah. And I never see or understand what that could even
be. But at the same time, I wouldn't want them to be trying to stop a portal, because I've seen so many movies stopping a portal.
But then why say it? It's kind of
weird. I mean, I think that leans into the reading of it as like, the script itself is like the way that a young child makes up a story for their Barbie. Like, I mean, there have been numerous readings of that in that way. And I think that is, that lends itself to that way. And it lets them get away with all the stuff they're trying to do, which is like way too much, way, way too much. But I prefer that to not trying much at all.
It is a very ambitious movie for sure. And it does land a lot of those things.
That reading, Chris, I would think is a little more legitimate if you didn't have the America Ferrera and the daughter part, because that part doesn't function like that. So you can't say that the whole movie's doing that, because they don't.
Well, that's not a part that a little
girl would recreate with her dolls. Like, oh, my fucking overworked, depressed mother and me, the angsty teen. Like, you're not playing that part.
But like, I think that's part of what I was meaning when like you're reconciling things. Like, how do you keep on having a life like Barbie's life, where that is how it's set out and that is how it exists, versus something like that with Sasha in the middle? I think that is what it's dealing with. And like, again, I'm not sure if there would be a satisfying ending to a movie like this.
Yeah.
I don't know if it exists.
Probably not.
And like, for something this big, for the trying as much as it does, like, I really don't know if you could ever land this plane.
It's really funny, and it looks really great. And I think that a lot of great performances, and again, I'm not throwing stones at the flick, and I'm glad people enjoyed it. And I think it's an important movie for people to enjoy, because that's your movie. You should enjoy it.
Yeah. I liked all the music in it. I like how like we are stopping at least twice in the movie. No, maybe like three times for like some real, like honest to goodness, old fashioned, like studio musical number sequences, which I thought were really great.
I think that's when it excelled the most. I feel like we should have leaned into that a little bit more and maybe even trimmed down the runtime.
Yes.
A little bit, but I will say my dream. I know Barbenheimer, not bad, but my dream double feature is Barbie and Southland Tales. Put them together, baby.
That'd be a great programming.
They've got very similar pulses going on, I think.
Also, you're gonna need the Ocean's 11 to fucking break Richard Kelly at our director's chair for that to happen.
George Clooney, please do that.
I think Michael Cera was a treat in this as well.
We haven't seen him
much lately, and I thought he was great.
And it was just, you know, it was funny. It was just Michael Cera doing Michael Cera stuff. And I'm like, that's what I like. You know what I mean? Like, there you go.
But I will say it had been a while since I'd seen him do Michael Cera stuff.
Exactly.
Because I will say I was getting pretty tired of it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a funny dude, but he's the fucking John Cale of the acting world, man. That is one note just humming along for 45 minutes. But really funny in this movie, you know, and McKinnon I thought was really funny too.
I think the hardest I've laughed in a theater in a long time is I will just say the 90s pop song Needle Drop that we get without spoiling what that is and how they use it.
They're talking about it in the chat. It is fucking hilarious.
The beach is just really, when they're on the beach and Ken is doing it, that was probably the hardest I've laughed in a long time. So there you go.
Can I tell you the funniest? So we were, our crowd was great.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, celebratory, had all the dress up and whatnot. Women like decked to the nines, fabulous gay men just out and about, and then like beards like me, you know, there with my wife and everything, just duding it up. But the guy in front of us, it was a real treat to behold this guy sitting there for this movie that he like, clearly this was not his first choice to go with his lady friend to the theater. And when I tell you, this isn't a spoiler or anything, but like, they make a really solid fucking Snyderverse joke in the movie. This dude in front of me, you can see him slump down in the chair. Even the lady friend, dude, the lady friend's like patting him on the shoulder, like, oh, don't get mad now. Don't call this. And I was like, I am sitting behind the biggest fucking loser in this theater right now. Primo.
Yeah, let's see the Justice League Zack Snyder cut do these numbers at the box office, pal. Mm-hmm.
It would not have.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was sweet, sweet shit there. I loved all the stuff with them like going to and from Barbie World and just like that really like intentionally fake old school, like the sky's going by, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought it's such an interesting aesthetic that, again, like I said up top, like I'm just so stunned that Warner Brothers, because like, let's be real, in their infinite wisdom about everything over the last couple of years, was like, yeah, you can do it. Like, stunned that some suit didn't get in there and was like, make this look more down to earth or like whatever shithead note.
But the Will Ferrell office looks like a Jodorowsky set. These are not references you usually find in major motion pictures like this. Certainly not ones that make $155 million in America.
Sure. Yeah.
And Warner Brothers got lucky because, you know, which we'll talk about in a minute, they fucked up and they lost Oppenheimer. You know what I mean? Oppenheimer absolutely would have been theirs, but they fucked around and found out, but they just sort of stepped into gold with Barbie, which is they got very lucky this weekend in terms of like backing the right horse.
Go ahead, dude.
Now, if we'll see if the Daniel Kaluuya gritty meta textual Barney movie is gonna do these numbers and is as well directed, we'll see.
I'm holding out for Teletubbies, dude.
That's the thing. And I mean, like, I do. We are now about to enter the Mattelverse. It's just going to be as stupid as any other verse we're going to be in,
and it's possibly not, stupider. Can I just say, stupider?
And that's the thing. Is that, I mean, it's not, and it's absolutely not Greta Gerwig's fault. You know what I mean? Because it's a great movie and it's got, you know, great stuff. But I mean, like, we are now going to enter the Mattelverse for fucking real. And you are going to see Rock'em Sock'em Robots. You're going to see.
I pulled
see
up the list. Hot Wheels.
Yes. Sure.
American Girl dolls.
Of course. Look, I'll say this about this.
Uno.
The Uno movie. I hope I get to play 8. Please, Steve, for 8.
I will say, as long as they do not, if Hot Wheels doesn't enter into Barbie 2, I'm fine.
Yeah,
just make your little dumb movies. Yeah,
yeah, sure.
These are just franchises in and of themselves. Like, that's the way it looks like Nintendo's going to do it. Like, it's just going to be Super Mario Brothers 2, and then Zelda, whenever Zelda happens, will be its own thing. Metroid, whenever Metroid is thing, will be its own thing. Mm. Like that, it was the mixing and the TV-ness of it all. Like, that was what was driving me insane about the Marvel movies.
Sure.
That was primo, and the way that affected how it was built dramatically and built stylistically. It corroded everything. So like, that is what bothered me. If you can just do this, guess what? John Wick just made my favorite John Wick movie, and it's the fourth one they did.
Right.
So, hey,
Maybe it works if it's just in franchises.
This summer, the Hot Wheels cars are getting ready to drive on an all-new track. And if they're lucky, a certain pink-wearing blonde might drop by to wish them well.
No, don't do that. Just don't do that.
And they have to digitally remove the sniper's red dot from Margot Robbie's head when she's acting in that movie.
So we'll see on all that. I will say what is kind of a bummer is like, so Greta like goes and does this movie. I have absolutely no interest and never have in the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe shit. Yeah. And yeah, I never watched any of those original movies. Never read I just don't care. And so this is like, I don't want it to be one of those things where here's a totally established, interesting filmmaker and she's going off and doing this franchise shit now. It's totally uninteresting to me.
I mean, yeah, I mean, this was my least favorite Greta Gerwig movie, but I do, and I think that Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe might, we can have some Little Women aspects of it, you know what I mean? Because there are some real world depression-y stuff, so like, you know.
Kids work, I mean, like, it is has a similar tone to it. I mean, like, that's the thing, I'm going to show up for whatever she does.
Exactly,
like,
yeah, this, agree.
This has been three things in a row by her that I really like to varying degrees. And I'm going to show up for whatever it is. We'll see. Like the story at this point, like a sense, so much of it is going to be corporate just like literature retreads and stuff like that. Like, I just have to show up for who's doing it at this point. Like, because so little of it is the original stuff. Like it is actual, like original ideas being done on a big screen with a big company behind it. It's just not, you don't see that often. So like, I just have to follow the people. That's all I can do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess we'll see. You got something there, Steve?
I know who we're following next. Mr. Big Dick Chris Nolan, man.
Absolutely. Right? Right. Oppie. Here we go.
There he is. Oppie. Love this guy.
Oh, can I tell you, I was not prepared for how many times we're saying Oppie in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And chanting Oppie. And the whole time. Because Eric, you texted it like before I texted it
as a joke.
Really?
And I hadn't seen the movie yet. And I was just sort of like, I was just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to see Oppie in a minute. And then they started saying, I'm like, did I write the movie?
Oh, fuck. Did I forget I wrote Oppenheimer? I mean, the whole time during the movie, I was saying it like Wally. I was just like, Oppie. It's just like repeatedly for 3 hours.
It is great. I mean, and this is like following the people, like Chris said. Like Chris Nolan did this. I feel like maybe someone else couldn't have pulled this off necessarily as well, and make it as riveting as it is. Like I'm like on the edge of my seat, hour like 2.5, like worried about his security clearance.
Yes,
acting, I think, is what really carries this forward. I think RDJ was fantastic.
I think
nomination is going to happen for this performance.
It's nice to have him back. I can't tell you how nice it is to enjoy him in a movie that's not under the auspices of the MCU or anything like that. Because it has, I mean, like, people who have seen The Judge will know what I'm talking about here. it is rough going outside of Iron Man with him lately. And like,
well, dude, forget about The Judge. This movie was completely absent of any bad English or Welsh accents that he might be trying to pull off.
Doolittle was nowhere near this, thank God. I mean, it was just beautiful to watch him do this kind of stuff again.
And he is absolutely riveting. He's fantastic. I will say, and obviously, I mean, I think Cillian Murphy is like otherworldly good, it's so important to this movie. The twitchiness, the weird sexiness that he's fucking everybody in that movie.
Dude, I had no idea Oppenheimer was laying this much pipe.
I love at the end, it's sort of towards the end of the movie, and I'm not spoiling anything, like somebody's like, but what about that woman? What about your affair with that woman? And he's like, oh, her husband never found out. It doesn't count before he died. And I'm like, Jesus, dude.
Yeah.
Leave some for the rest of Los Alamos, Mr. Oppenheimer.
People have been criticizing the sexuality of the film or sex at all being in the movie. Nope. But it's like you're making a nuanced portrait of a person. And I think the sex scene is effective for the callback to it in the sort of interrogation kind of scene.
He's a sexual person. People have sex lives, and that's
people be fucking.
But I'm sorry, people be fucking. But people, but even on like a story structure level, there's a reason for that sex scene that comes up later.
But there is a reason. I mean, like actually, in the text as well. But like, I want to know, like, so many of the world's like most gravest men were also horn dogs, like weird looking guys as well. Ooh, like Oppenheimer, like you know him as this, like he looks like a skeleton when he says the "I have become death." You know, when he actually says it on TV, like that to know that he actually he just needed to fuck married women, like he just needed to do it day in day out was his real passion.
You're gonna have to build
world.
A you're gonna have to build a town, build it fast. I'm gonna cuck everyone's wives.
Yes, bring their families. I'm gonna fuck them.
You need to bring the scientists and their families. I'm gonna fuck their wives quietly.
If Oppenheimer had access to computers and internet, maybe he'd be jerking it more than he would be going out and putting it places.
Look, we're gonna have it's gonna be a town swap, you see. Everybody a town, and we're gonna swap.
I think Emily Blunt's fantastic in this movie. I do think that Downey Jr. is gonna be nominated. However, Jason Clarke doing off the top rope, he like doing what he does best, which is being unlikable.
Yes.
He finds a way to be in a room with a guy with no fewer than 100,000 fatalities, and for you to look at the other guy that Jason Clarke is playing, and like, fuck that guy. Why is he being so rude to Oppenheimer?
I know.
You're totally right, dude.
And you know,
it's a masterstroke.
But
the man in the glasses is being mean to the fucking mass murderer.
Yes.
But the way they handle the mass murder is very well. Like the whole movie is like a meditation on like how horrible this was.
Yes.
And I feel like there's a lot of misreadings on the internet I was seeing.
Of course,
people being very sympathetic to the Axis powers. Which, that's your choice. That's fine.
I mean, because I think that's more because like a movie must be everything now, right? Like it must also you can't just make Flags of Your Fathers.
You have to do Letters from Iwo Jima as well.
They have to be at the same movie, the same thing time, about at that. The same.
I love that Eastwood did those separately, and it's funny you bring that up, Chris, because I was thinking about it a lot after this movie. Those two, I want to revisit.
Incredible films, wonderful movies.
I mean, but I think that we deal. I mean, like that's what's so great about the sort of last 50 minutes. Of the movie, it does turn into a courtroom movie, which is really smart, and it gives the movie another engine after the engine of the bomb falling, or of the test, and then the bomb. But you're struggling with legacy. You know what I mean? And how does this stuff get adjudicated through the courts? Through how, you know what I mean? Like all these little public failures and or humiliations for various characters. I had a question for the group because I was sort of split on this, but I wound up liking it. Uh-huh. Do we think it's chicken shit? Because there's only one moment where, and I mean, I think so much of the movie does grapple with the horror that Oppenheimer unleashes. It's not a hagiography at all. There's one moment when he's in a room where they're showing him pictures, which are very famous pictures of the nuclear, of the fallout of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And the camera stays on him. It stays on his horror of what he saw. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's chicken shit to not show the audience that at that moment? Or do you think I wind up liking that because we're so close on him. And I think Murphy again is really good. He's dealing with
it. I think they handled it well. I think if you did more of it,
shock value,
it would have been, it would have been a little weird, maybe.
If it would, and that's I think the issue is that you have to show an image that isn't the images everybody knows in that moment. Like it has to be something that is really new. Do I think it would have helped if you get one or two font? Yeah, I do think you probably would feel the impact a little bit more. I like the reflection after the speech.
Yes.
I think that's a very strong way of dealing with that.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Nolan thing. Nolan doesn't like that stuff. He doesn't.
Yeah.
That's why no blood. Like that's his thing. He does not like this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's about the inner turmoil of the character for having done this. And
that's thank you. Awesome. That's exactly right. That's what I was trying to sit here and articulate. But like, if you show those images, then it becomes about that. And that's not what this movie's about. Yep. And like, as people have been helpfully pointing out on the internet and in this very chat, like, yes, no shit. There are other movies you can go to for that stuff.
Yes.
And that's not what this movie is addressing. And that's why it's not there.
I just want to be clear because some people, I like that decision. I wanted to volley that ball so we could talk about it. Yeah, but I do like that decision.
No, it's great. Yeah. And just him just like grappling with the fact that he had basically been responsible for killing so many people, but I also think people need to, especially Americans, want to do something this week. Take 5 minutes out and Google Chinese deaths World War II, and just check it out.
Check it out. To what end? What should they be looking for?
I'm just
for?
Saying Imperial Japan was as bad as the Nazis.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's... But, like, it goes more to, like, what is, like... I think it's good to have a little shock of things that brings you, like, this was exactly, like, my problem with Tar, right? Is that it's very hermetic. And, like, I think the thing with Oppenheimer you have to buy into that it has a similar thing, is that it is about this character. And, therefore, if something's coming in from outside of it, you, like... I think that's good. I think it's good to breach that once or twice just to like show that there is a world outside. But it doesn't hurt the film to me. Like I like this movie much more than I like Tar. But
I love Tar too.
I mean, Tar is great. But like
Tar was my favorite of the other year. This might end up being my favorite of this year. I don't know.
This is my favorite. This is right now is my favorite. It just edged out Beau Is Afraid as my top.
This is tied with Tenet for my favorite Nolan movie. There are two sides of a coin with him. I like,
you know,
I like.
Oppie is afraid of this profilation of nuclear arms.
It is just, but it's amazing that Nolan made a drama. It's a biographical, because he's only done thriller and action movie at this point, right? I mean, you'd have to put them in those buckets. Like Prestige is a thriller.
Call Prestige, like
I call it a thriller. You know, because it's got the twist ending and the whole thing.
Yeah, sure.
Insomnia is definitely a thriller. Yes. Following is a thriller. Memento is a crime drama thriller. You know what I mean? Like thriller. And or action. And this is like the full on, like nobody fires a fucking gun in this movie. I mean, we dropped the mother of all bombs. We don't even, you know what I mean? Like,
don't need no gun.
I would argue though that it's just as thrilling and way more horrifying than any of his other movies. Like this is a straight, I was thinking about this like as the credits rolled, like, you know, whatever horror I consume this year, like this is the most horrifying movie I saw this year. And, you know, if I think like if you're out there watching this movie as like, look, they're dramatizing Oppenheimer and getting you to feel bad for him. Go back and watch it again, because I don't believe that's I think this is just an indictment of this whole thing. And no one is coming at like Nolan is not sitting there like, we should be kinder to this guy or what. No, no, no. Ooh. It is a real fuck all these people. Fuck their evil fucking hubris. Like, fuck all of them. They're all just as guilty. And that's what it's like. It's kind of funny because, like, again, like Eric, you said, all of that trial about, or in a trial, like the little hearing about his security clearance, like, I think part of it, like, that is such a low stakes thing. And it allows you to sort of sit there with everything else. Cause like, you don't give a shit if he gets a security clearance at the end, but it allows you to focus on like what's being said. And in that time, I was just marinating in like, fuck this piece of shit. Like, I don't care. Like just the notion of like, oh, I was just the scientist doing my math. And that's just I didn't know what it was going to, you know, fuck you, dude. But fuck all these people. Rot in hell.
But fuck all the Germans that were researching too. And the Russians as well.
I mean, but this is the thing, is like the trick of the movie is that you do care about him. Like, I don't think like
I care about him deeply at the end there when he's like, oh, I'm like, but Oppie needs Q level clearance.
That's the thing, is like people, he makes you like have that feelings about like the point is like I think of this as a big budget remake of Memento in a way. Is like he finds a way to create this way he's doing it righteously, like through his like. I mean, they talk a lot about how he was his Jewishness in this and that stuff. And like there's these building blocks of how you create a narrative where you are doing the right thing. And they end up being false. They end up being oases. Like they do not exist. And like this is that on a big scale, like through science and innovation and all this stuff. And like trying to stop what you consider absolute evil, you create something 10 times more evil in a way.
Right, like, exactly.
And like that is, it's horror. That is true horror, is because you see a man do that. You don't see some total villain. Like he's not a cackling anime villain. Yeah. He's just like this guy who was obsessed and had a brain for this stuff.
And why Nolan is so perfect for the movie is two things. One, the amount of power and the amount of engagement and the excitement for all of these different moments and all of these different things. And there's never like a bullshit, I was calling it last night, like a house moment where like, he's just sitting around like, wait a second. Somebody's like, oh man, it's cold. I'm going to put a jacket on. It's like, what'd you just say? Put a jacket on. We have to stop the isotopes. And, you know, run around and solve the problem. You know what I mean? Like, you could totally do that.
You could, yeah.
But that's what, because the movie knows the bomb is going to drop. The movie expects the bomb to drop.
Yes.
And it's just the horror of the march to it. And I think that what the Nolan-ness of it, to your point, Chris, and kind of goes to what I was talking about a little earlier, is like, everyone's hands are clean the entire fucking movie. No one, there isn't a drop of blood, but there are fucking hundreds of thousands dead by the end of it, because that's how these people worked. You know what I mean? He was in Los Alamos. He never saw fucking, you know what I mean? Like the actual carnage. So then we don't see it. And your hands are clean, but you have to live with the information that he lives with.
Yeah, right. And the way that they do, like, they trick you into, like, to like Andrew's point, like, this was an act of, like, this is very easily seen as an act of evil. Like, when you're watching Cillian Murphy talk to Ben Safdie about stuff, you are getting, like, wrapped up in, like, the technical talk with them. Yes. What are they talking about? But you don't, and then for a moment, you forget first that they're talking about what's the difference. Should we make and deploy a nuclear bomb, or should we make and deploy a hydrogen bomb?
Yeah.
Is essentially what they're arguing. And like the fact that it is those two things at once, this like monotonous but also rhythmic and intellectual conversation, and also this just discussion of good versus evil, or just evil versus more evil, like is powerful. It's some of the most powerful stuff he's done ever, period.
Yeah. That, like, the ending, and, you know, not to spoil too much, but like that whole, you know, the final reveal about like what did Einstein say to him, and like that final shot.
Oh yeah,
it's fucking, it's bone chilling.
Yeah, oh totally.
Like, this is a movie that is meant to like take you so far outside of yourself and like look at this planet as a whole and just and like sit there and think, and like that's why, like, I think part of the genius of it being 3 hours is it gives you time to sit there and ruminate on all this while it's happening. And it's like, we are so hyped to fucking kill ourselves, and we will kill ourselves, and not enough people give a flying fuck about it. And like, I was just sitting there getting so enraged watching this movie, and I hope other people do too. And I hope, you know, one movie's not going to change the world or whatever, but like, if more people just kind of thought on the whole about that shit, I'd sleep a little better at night, man. But like, as it stands, the night after seeing this movie, I did not sleep too well. Sure. I was mad. I was fucking terrified, because like, those people don't care. They didn't care then. They certainly don't care now.
And you can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Nope. No.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's here now. That's why it's like, I guess we're going to have to do H-bombs, and we're going to have to do an arms race now.
That Benny Safdie line, like, which is all over the trailer, but like, yeah, like, what happens when someone builds a bigger bomb? And all I could think about was like those fucking like Yosemite Sam Looney Tunes, where it's like guns going over the planet, you know, arms race visual gags like that. And it's like, it's fucking disturbing.
I mean, I think ending on the Einstein bit was smarter than the original ending, which was him looking at a vanity mirror, looking at his 14-inch cock and being like, you're going to be a star, and put it back in his
God spread in the news.
I'm fucking your wife. Yeah.
He sent that cock through communist channels.
He's just trolling like registries, like for newly married people. He's just like, oh, can I buy you something? Hi, who was your wife?
Wouldn't it be great if it was nothing about the bomb? It was just in the background, and he's just
just getting it wet all the time. Oh, yeah, totally.
And for every once in a while, Josh Hartnett comes out to say, hey, you know, we're working on the thanks. I'm fucking someone right now.
He was good too, Josh Hartnett. And by the way, people,
phenomenal.
Wrath of Man came out a few years ago. He's also very good in that. So check that out.
Hartnett, this is my favorite Benny Safdie performance probably ever.
Yeah. David Krumholtz, man. Krumholtz is awesome in this movie.
He is. I mean, it's just wall to wall. And Emily Blunt is fantastic.
Yes.
I think we can't say enough. That scene when, like, she's just drinking and he's like, aren't you going to go to the baby? And she's like, I've been going all day. And I'm like, yeah,
she's fucking great in the movie. I'm seeing a lot of people, like, females being underutilized in this movie. I mean, sure, but think about the time and the setting of this movie.
Yes.
Yeah, it takes place in Kendom, or the Kingdom of Ken, or whatever.
I mean, I'm glad that the movie is as to be quite honest, as white and as male as it is, because A, that's how this shit worked. And B, like,
yeah,
if you did a race blind kind of cast where, like, you don't care, blah, 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 I just want to have really diverse and interesting actors in the movie, it lessens the effect of
that. It lessens the indictment.
It lessens the indictment, especially of the cheering rally scene. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
If that is like a beautiful array of diverse Americans that were never fucking in Los Alamos, you don't get what you're getting, which is like this cheering whiteness stomping their feet. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's always been his weakness. Like, it's fine. It's the same thing with Michael Mann. Michael Mann has struggled for a long time to have a meaningful female character. Like, it didn't happen till later. And like, I think Emily Blunt really picks up the slack in the latter half of this.
Yes,
that
she
does. I was worried in the first part because she wasn't being used, I thought, that well. She was for like scenes like the baby scene. Like, you got these little cuts, but you didn't get her to really punch. And then she gets the scene where it's her and what's his name? Jason Clark, where she just absolutely pummels him.
Oh, dude, she tears that tree down.
So you get stuff like that. And I think that, like, this is an advancement. Like, Nolan has these weaknesses. It's okay to look at these as weaknesses that he's going to work on, hopefully.
And
who knows?
And should he restructure it and completely fumble the ball doing something he necessarily might not be the best suited for is another thing.
I don't think he would have done better. Like, I didn't feel like that was missing. Like, I thought the scenes with Florence Pugh are very, very affecting. Yeah, I agree. Really haunted by them all.
Yes.
Even like,
she's like a specter, like haunting the whole movie.
I thought it worked. It all worked for me.
The glove scene, the glove shot. That's going to be, I mean, that's one of those Nolan things.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be one of those, like, you're jogging back on Blu-ray to check out what's going on there. But I thought that was kind of an interesting, like, sort of put that in. The old timer that's part of the committee there.
I love that guy.
Dude, but this guy was so old. I was like, was he some dude like involved in the project or something? Like,
no, they're all
the last living fucking guy.
They all got radiation poisoning and died.
Yes.
The last cafeteria worker. They just got him to hang out there.
That's what I want. I wanted, you know, I'm glad that the movie just ends and there's not like Robert Oppenheimer died, but none of that shit.
Well, there's no super text at all. There's no 1941. You never know what time it is until you have to kind of pay attention and be like, oh, this is before the war. This is after the war. This is, you know what I mean? And like all that stuff. Also, by the way, the black and white is stunningly beautiful on 70 millimeter.
Really? Oh my God. Ooh,
boy. I mean, the whole movie is beautiful, but the black and white is like, ouch. That looks
good. Had to create special film stock, special black and white IMAX 65 gauge film stock for this movie.
That's amazing.
That's crazy. I will say to the fucking the booth team at AMC Lincoln Square, clean the fucking gate in your projector. There were dust bunnies all over the screen.
LA.
I was bumming hard, man. At first I was like, is there like a bug like stuck? But like you looked and it was just like dust here and there. And like, listen, you don't want to be damaging these prints, folks. So clean up your act down there. Get some white gloves on.
There have been numerous reports of like problems with those 70 millimeter screenings.
No one knows how to project anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It's a staff issue. It just seems like.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not the guy to know this, but I thought it looked great. I at least at the Village East. I don't know if anyone else can confirm or deny.
Mine looked great. It's why I really, you know, I didn't go down to the Brooklyn Alamo to see it on 70 millimeter there. They don't appreciate real projectionists in the same way. There was just some dust, but no, overall it looked amazing. Mm-hmm. And you know, like I said, I was front row. It was front row IMAX, and it was a movie you could feel. It was incredibly immersive, and I think like for a movie like that, you need to be immersed. And I was in it to win it.
I think he does that well from the beginning too. Like I think a lot of people have been talking a lot about once they get to Los Alamos and once that really firms up. But like I thought the stuff of him when he's still at college was phenomenal. Like the little cutaways to the particles and the real like
all that stuff
sense of what him building who he is and his ideas about science and physics and all this stuff. Like I thought they handled it very, very well.
It was a more interesting look into the quantum verse than Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, for sure.
Quite some measure, yeah.
Oh, that could have been the genie that he can't get out of the bottle anymore. He finds little Ant-Man and stuff, and it's just like, oh no.
But you know what? I think we could be here for another few hours. The length of Oppie talking about these movies we saw this week, but we want to cut it here, folks. And yet, just as a reminder, first of all, this is the last of these for several weeks. We're going on break. On Screen Live will return sometime in September. We'll be sure to let you know in advance. But, you know, this was a new thing we started this year. What? Am I here?
Yeah. You're frozen for a second.
Oh, sorry about that. But yeah, no. What I was saying was this is going off the air until September. We'll be back. But, you know, this kicked in as like a thing we sort of started last fall and then like in earnest really kicked in January, and it's been growing exponentially ever since. And you know, really appreciate everyone coming in on Mondays to watch live, and everybody who catches the replay on YouTube or downloads the audio. You know, it's been really awesome getting to do this new branch of what we do here, so that's really cool. But going into the final week of the season here on We Hate Movies, now out on the Patreon, of course, where things are going to continue through August, we do have an episode of The Nexus, which was out last week. Be sure to catch up with that. And then tomorrow, dropping on the main feed, folks, the season finale of season 13, Kev Costner, The Postman. We finally did it. Eric was thrilled to talk about one of his favorite movies.
I made them watch it.
You sure did.
You know what, Oppenheimer, the better 3-hour movie. I'll say that.
Oh wow, okay, yeah, that's
That's, I agree.
That, bold decision there.
That's fair. Yeah, stunningly, this episode though still about 40 minutes shorter than The Postman.
That's what you want.
So that's coming out on Tuesday, and then on Thursday on Patreon.com/WeHateMovies and all new animation damnation, we will be talking about Gremlins: Secrets of the Mogwai. Now this was, I'll say it's a cartoon I didn't hate. No, I actually kind of enjoyed
it's
watching
kind of
it.
A we like animation.
Watch it now before they get rid of it.
The tax man takes it.
Yeah, exactly right. Get to hear James Hong in all his fucking glory. And then on Friday of this week, we'll be dropping the July edition of the Gleep Glossary. And Eric, mm-hmm. who are we talking about?
Uta Guta Han Solo, right?
Boom! Yeah, look at that casual son of a bitch.
I love that picture. It's a big fat Gleep for to end the week out with. I think it's over an hour, so it's going to be a lot of fun. Please tune in for that.
Now, even though the Postman, go ahead, Kevin.
Well, it's also, I want to point out, it is also a backdoor episode, a backdoor pilot of sorts
for next week.
For a character named Galandro, mm-hmm. who is important.
That's right.
And that you need to know about.
Galandro will appear in August.
Yes. And speaking of that, like, even though the main feed is going dark with in-studio episodes, all through August on the main feed, we'll be doing our usual summer live episode releases. So stay tuned for those. And Steve, I know you're getting to it. Do it.
No, yeah. Well, you want to listen to all of those in studio, those live episodes, because one has an actual live VHS trailer game, which does shift the balance of power within the Marvel universe, and and the finale, the last episode of that, which is Universal Soldier, will have the actual VHS trailer game finale where a winner is crowned, and we find out what episode we're going to redo to come back in September.
That's right. Nice. And just to clarify on that, now that was not, we didn't do VHS trailer game in Phoenix when we did Unisol. This is an in-studio bumper that we recorded last week. Mm-hmm. Wild finale of the VHS trailer game.
And in August, by the way, we will be dropping a in-studio episode on the Wheel of Movies feed on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Sorry, folks.
That's right.
It's time.
1990s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We recorded that episode already. It was a lot of fun. Tune in for that. And also tune in for the return of Once in a Lifetime, where we're going to be talking about the weird Facebook thriller, Killer Profile, a.k.a. Do You Trust Your Boyfriend?
Uh-huh. And you got to be careful, Eric. We don't want to get sued. It's not Facebook. It's Flashback.
So, yeah, we're taking a break, which means we're not going to be recording stuff, but we have so much shit jammed up and ready for you. You're not even going to notice we're gone.
Absolutely. Not gonna be.
That's right. But we will be back here in September with all new On Screen Live, covering movies, trailers, box office, and a whole lot more. But thanks so much for tuning into this initial season. It's been a lot of fun. And until September, I've been Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadek.
Eric Siska.
Chris Cabin.
Have a good August, folks. Bye-bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast. This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling Yuzu Mango IQ Mix Hydration Mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20. This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.